Hi there, and thanks for joining us on this week's podcast, Counting Trees from Space. Restaurant royalty that have turned their hands to food trucks and life in the gym now that they're all open again. I'm Jonathan Healy, and this is Red Business.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
You might think it's easy to keep track of a forest, but it's a very hard process for the most part. And my next guest has come up with a really clever way of doing it from space. Enda De Keen is the CEO of Cork company Tree Metrics. How are you, Enda?
Yeah, very good, Jonathan.
How did you end up working in trees?
Well, I suppose the background, my dad was a forester, so I grew up surrounded by trees as a young fella. And I'd no real inclination to become a forester as a young fella, but I was surrounded by them. And then when you're leaving cert and you're pushed to make a decision and a choice to go into computer science or forestry, and I don't know what came over me, but I took the decision to go over forestry. And obviously I had an interest in the environment and the outdoors and stuff, so that's what kind of swung it. And it was down to that, you know, dilemma of what do you choose to do in your career, and I went for forestry, and that was it. And there's no looking back, I suppose.
I'm always fascinated by people who are involved in forestry, because unlike a dairy farmer where the cow produces milk every day, or you could turn beef around in 18 months, trees take a long time to grow, and you are literally looking at your investment for a long time before you're able to call it in. There are many different ways, I presume, that people would have monitored forests, but clearly you saw a gap in the market to do it using technology.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When I came out of college, you spend, you know, whatever years you of your early time in college learning how to measure a forest, and they give you all these formulas and models, and they give you these kind of measuring tapes, and off you go and you go out and measure them. And then when the real world happens, when you cut the trees and bring them to the sawmill, in my earlier years, I was just finding that I was never getting it right, that the systems just weren't working. And my fellow colleagues in the industry were saying the same thing, that it's a difficult crop to measure because of the variation. You get big trees and small trees and straight trees and crooked trees and difficult terrain, etc. And so yeah, we were making mistakes, and I just felt it just wasn't good enough. And lots of my colleagues had the same opinion as well, that there was a lot of error in the system, so a lot of mistakes. And you're talking about big money on the line if you do make a big mistake. So a lot of risk. So I set about trying to come up with a better way of measuring, started looking for solutions, and yeah, stumbled across one. And yeah, then took the bold decision to dive into trying to develop it and bring it to the world of forestry. So that was 17 years ago, would you believe, Jonathan? It's hard to believe.
It's a 17-year overnight success, as they say. I mean, like, what options to go up in a hot air balloon and count the trees? That's kind of time prohibitive. You kind of went further and decided space might be an option. How did you end up linking in with the European Space Agency?
But it all came from my very first job when I was studying above in UCD. I got a job when I graduated for a few months working with UCD on a project with satellite imagery above in Roscommon, of all places. And they sent me off in a van with a few of my colleagues, and we had to go out. And actually, in those days, like nearly 30 years ago, the satellites were very crude, and you could just about make out, was it a forest or a field or a lake? And if you look at Google Earth today, you can look down in Cork and you can see your house and you can see your car maybe, and you can maybe even see just about make out people. Well, in those days, each pixel on the ground was like 20 meters by 20 meters. So it was just a smudge. Cork would only be a big smudge. But it got my attention, and I learned the basics of satellite imagery back there 30 years ago. And I just kept track of the ever-improving satellites and how they were getting more precise and more precise. And I suppose it was as a result of the arms race and the Russians and the Americans investing hugely in space technologies that the satellites got better and better and better. And then they started making them available to the general public. And yeah, so nowadays it's incredible the resolution. You can pick out a single tree now from space. So it made logical sense that you would use satellite technology to map your forest and to work out how many trees you had. So before you ever went out on the ground to measure the trees, at least you knew now how many trees you had. And that was a big part of the mistakes that were being made in the forest industry. And as a young forester, you were given a paper map and you were sent off to your forest for a few days. And like the paper map was very crude and you'd make a lot of mistakes. But nowadays, thankfully, on your phone, you have this super, you know, quality image. And the other thing about space is you got GPS. So now you can at least track yourself and you know where you are in the forest. That was also a big issue about knowing where you were in this dense crop. And then the final piece of the jigsaw was satellite communications, that the space technologies delivered communications to anywhere in the world. So a lot of foresters spend a lot of time out in remote areas where there's no mobile phone coverage. So the three pillars of space are imagery, GPS, and communications. So it made logical sense as a forester that if we were going to develop a tech solution, we'd go to the European Space Agency, and Enterprise Ireland were hugely helpful to us. They had a door.
Well, yeah, that was my next question. Did you just rock up one day and said, "How's it going, lads? I have a great idea," or did you go through an intermediary?
Yeah, I went through an intermediary. I spoke at a conference one day, and Enterprise Ireland came up after and said, "You know, you can go to the Space Agency with your vision and what you're trying to do." And a few months later, we were in the space agency in Holland. They have a place there in Noordwijk in Holland, and showed them our vision. And they said, "Well, great idea. We can help you. And we've got the satellites and we've all the scientists and engineers." So we worked out a deal with them, which was hard to believe. It was an amazing moment. It was in 2012 when we signed our first deal with them. And that was exciting to get in the door and actually win some work with them and start to work. And that began a great new kind of journey for the company. And we're 10 years nearly almost with them, and it's been a great experience. They've continued to help us and to support us as new technology comes out from them. It's helping us to improve our system. So now we use satellites now to, as I said, to map forests, count the trees, but we also still, they help us on the ground as well in knowing where we are and collecting data and making sure the data gets back to wherever we want it sent to. So yeah, it's been a great experience, and yeah, it's good, you know, going to meet them every year. It's always kind of funny when you're walking past these rockets and
and there you are counting trees, but still it holds up. It's quite the journey you've been on, but it's very similar to another business we featured recently, Apis Protect, Fiona Edwards Murphy's business, where, you know, they're all around the world helping bee farmers manage and control bees and checking out whether they're sick or not, using really cutting edge technology. And here you are doing the same thing, but doing it for trees. Ultimately, where does this go, Enda? I mean, you are looking, I'm presuming, at forests around the world and helping people right across the globe to do this in a better way and probably help the environment in the process.
Yeah, exactly. Over the 17 years, we've worked in over 35 countries around the world. So we've already been out and about, getting lost and out and about on the ground and learning all about forestry in different parts of the world. And foresters and forest owners have the same challenges if they're in Ireland or if they're in Chile or anywhere in the world where we've been. You know, they still have the same challenges of knowing how many trees they have, how healthy are they, what size are they, what do you do next with them. There's a lot of issues out there in the forest world at the moment. As a direct result of climate change, forests are getting drier. They're more susceptible. Because they're drier, they're more susceptible to fires and to disease and insect attack. So yeah, a lot of issues out there in the forestry world. So we have a big role to play in helping owners to know what they have and, you know, what do they do next if there's issues being spotted. And yeah, our mission really is to get out there now more with the private owners of the world. There are lots of governments manage forests and they have great systems and lots of money and lots of resources, but the private owners of the world have nothing, basically. So our mission is to help the private owners in particular. And there are, hard to believe, but there are 16 million private owners in Europe alone. And Europe's forests are unfortunately coming under major stress from disease and insect attack. In particular, insect attack. We had a huge infestation of bark beetles across Central Europe there over the last 3 years, and killing, you know, hundreds of millions of trees. And also, here in Ireland, we've had the ash disease, unfortunately, which is wiping out ash as a species across our country. And that's just an example of the climate change, the very real impact that it's having on our environment.
Yeah.
And yeah, so big challenges ahead for humanity. And, you know, we need more information, basically, and we need to help those owners to keep an eye on their crop and know what to do and keep it healthy and you know, put the right trees back when the trees are dying. You need to replant trees that'll survive for the next 50, 100 years.
Well, as they always say, and data is king, and that's what you're doing. You did well, considering you had choices, and you, by your own admission, forestry shouldn't have been your first choice, but there was someone with their hand on your shoulder knowing there was more in Endakeen. We wish you the very best luck as you continue to expand around the world. Endakeen, CEO of Tree Metrics, thanks so much for joining us on Red Business, Enda.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Thank you very much.
Red Business, all that's best about business in Cork.
One of the big revelations of lockdown has been the marina market, and it genuinely blew me away. The first time I went there, it felt like an out of Cork experience, very similar to an out of body experience. But I really felt I was more in somewhere like Covent Garden than I was in the heavily industrialized marina. But it's down to the types of businesses that are there and a little bit of creative vision as to what people might want to do in a global pandemic. So I'm delighted to be joined by two brothers who operate two of the units at the marina market, Colin and Philip Ryan. How are you, gents?
Very good. How are you?
Very good, Jonathan. How are you keeping?
Very well. Now, which of you is handsome?
That's me, Colin.
That's you, Colin. And that's not a description of your appearance because it's radio and I can't see you. And which one? And that means, Philip, you are smooth, correct?
Yes, I'm smooth. Yeah.
Okay.
Next to Colin's
unit. So Colin obviously has a bit of an owl complex that he calls his business handsome. But tell us a little bit about what it is, Colin.
A little bit of a complex. Basically, it's a chicken rotisserie takeaway. So I'm doing chicken sandwiches, full chickens and half chickens.
Okay, and I'm already hungry listening to this because I remember seeing it at the time. You took a unit down there. I'm going to unfairly describe it as a box, but you had to kit it out and you had to make it kitchen ready and you had to follow all the hygiene rules. But you're churning out chicken, yeah?
Yes, exactly. So I bought it in January and spent maybe 2 months getting it ready. And Phil actually did it with me and gave me a hand with everything setting it up. So we were down there every day and then we got to choose our spot down there. So we chose outside and kitted the whole thing, got the rotisserie in from Germany and everything and made it all basically perfectly health officer friendly and everything. And got cracking with the two rotisseries in there, burning full time pretty much. So it's flying, thank God.
Yeah, the great thing about rotisseries like that, anyone who's ever gone to Spain knows that these are everywhere. Like there's little chicken places all over the place. But we didn't really kind of grasp it here in Ireland until relatively recently.
No, you don't really see it many places. And that was kind of the idea behind it, really, was there's nowhere you can get a rotisserie chicken cooked in front of you and pulled apart right in front of you and put into a fresh ciabatta sandwich made right in front of you. I haven't seen anywhere in Cork that does that fresh. So that was the idea behind it, really. And it seems to have taken off.
Okay. And the brothers next year, quite literally there now, but also down there. Now, I have to say, Colin, I didn't indulge at yours. But Philip, I have indulged at Smoove. But you might tell the people who are listening what Smoove does.
We were kind of building Colin's unit down below, so I was helping him out and I got a bit of container envy when I was down there. So decided to open up a unit serving ice creams, smoothies, waffles and milkshakes.
Okay.
Basically all the sweet treats.
Yeah, and they're very good, by the way. I have to say, I was really, really happy that I chose yours.
I've learned a lot about ice cream over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'd imagine you did shift a good bit. Both of your backgrounds, you're really steeped in the foodie scene, aren't you? Because was it your granddad set up the Arbutus Lodge?
Yeah, our grandfather set up the Arbutus Lodge in, I think it was 1972, I think. And it was the first Michelin-starred restaurant in Ireland. So we kind of grew up running around the halls of there and our family have been in the hospitality industry since.
Right. And of course, your dad was also involved. I think he was one of the head chefs at the Arbutus Lodge for a while.
Yeah, he was a head chef for years. And when we were kids, he used to have a TV show on RTE, Movable Feast, an old cooking show when I was in primary school. And yeah, I set up Isaac. So I think Isaac is turning about 31 years old now this year.
Right. You hadn't a hope, lads. Yeah, you were going to end up cooking something or making some kind of food, weren't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it. Listen, it's in our blood and it's kind of all we know. So we said we'd continue on the family heritage.
The only problem, of course, is that in the current environment, restaurants are not having a good time. Was that the motivation, Colin, behind your enterprise with Hansen? Was that whatever you could do, you couldn't do it indoors, so you had to adapt?
Yeah, exactly. So I always thought hospitality was the safest line of work for me. I thought if there was any recession, people would want to drink, want to eat out. I never expected something like this to happen. So just being kind of put out of work so suddenly and like out of work for the whole year, I never expected something like that. So we were thinking about what we could do. And the fact that food takeaway can be served through any lockdown or anything, that was kind of the main runner behind it, to be kind of have a safe job. So that's why we set it up, and then to be outdoors as well, you can't really be shut down. So that was the plan behind all that, just to kind of have a safe job to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to be moving the two units around, lads, if you didn't have a permanent base in the Marina Market. I'm guessing that was the savior here, that you had somewhere where you could literally park up and you knew you were going back there every day.
Yeah, very much so. We are fully plumbed down there, and we have three phase power on site as well. So it's not something that you could maybe, you know, bring up to the electric picnic, dump in a field, because there's a bit of work to moving them, you know. So hopefully it'll live down there for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, there's no sign of it moving, though. I mean, I see that as a semi-permanent fixture on the foodie scene in Cork, purely because it's got so much variety. I like the day I was there, it was really, really busy and people were really enjoying it. And I get the impression it's like that a lot of the time.
Yeah, very much so. Listen, there's always kind of new traders coming in, which is fantastic. So we'd know a lot of the traders before this. But the atmosphere down there is fantastic. And as I said, every week we're coming in, which is fantastic. So more of a draw. People are coming down all the time. And to be honest, people are only starting to realize that this is a thing, you know. So lots of people have known it's there, but there's been a lot of talk about it in the last couple of weeks. So people, we're seeing lots of new faces down there all the time.
There's competition, though. I mean, who's got the biggest queue? That was the thing I spotted. There was quite the queue at Hansom the day I was there as well, and there was another few places inside. Burnt always has a steady queue. I mean, people know what they like, don't they? And the great thing about having that variety is they can gravitate wherever they want to.
Yeah, very much so. Listen, what I found out is that people only like to eat ice cream when it's sunny. So sunny day, I'll revisit my roster and just put another few people in there. When it's raining, I can pretty much do it on my own, you know?
Yeah, you haven't met my kids. They'll eat ice cream any day of the week, whether the sun is shining or not. Look, lads, it's brilliant to talk to you both. Now that we are approaching something like a bit of hope, and obviously our confidence has been knocked again in the last week or so, is this it? Have you any other plans now that you found a taste for this? Could this be the direction that both of your careers head in from here out?
I think so, yeah. I was running the Oyster Tavern in town, but I've actually just left now from as of last Sunday. So I'm full-time Hansom now for the summer.
See, look, there's the arrogance again. Full-time Hansom. Philip, how do you live with them?
I'm fully invested in it now, so going to try give the chicken game a go full time.
Colin and Philip Ryan of Hansom and Smoove and Isaacs, thank you so much for joining us on Red Business. Whatever comes next, lads, the best of luck.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Great talking.
Cheers. Cheers.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
It's been back to the gym for lots and lots of people. In fact, a couple of gyms I've passed by, it's great to see people coming in and out, although it's a little bit clinical inside there as people respect the COVID rules. Cian O'Flynn is the co-owner of ATP Fitness based in Donnybrook and Douglas. He's with me now. Cian, how are you?
I'm good now. Thanks, John. I'm delighted to be back in action.
You're about a month back in. How's it been?
Yeah, so we're now nearly 4 weeks back. It's been amazing. We find, like, you know, this time around, opening back up, clients were very, very excited to get back in, to get back training. We found the third lockdown, but ourselves and clients definitely struggled the most with their mental health, with, you know, just not having access to you know, being able to go and exercise in a safe place. The last 4 weeks has just been, you know, everyone's buzzing to get back. Everyone's like smiling, coming in the door, getting their sessions done. So it's been a really exciting and fun time for us.
But you really were counting the days you were closed. How long were you closed in total?
So we were closed over 11 out of 15 months. So it's pretty brutal from the business point of view. We were closed nearly 5.5 months the last lockdown.
Right. And how did you and your business partners survive that? Because it's like every business that had to close. Some businesses carried on regardless. Some people didn't feel it at all. You had to close. You customers that you wanted to service, but you couldn't. What was it like for your own head?
It was very, very tough. Myself and my close friend and business partner, Ian, we both found it very tough. It's very frightening prospect, you know, closing your business and like having to close your business. And we were obviously fully on board with like why we had to do that, but it was just like so many unknowns, you know, not knowing how long the lockdowns were going to last for, not knowing, you know, when we opened back up again, you know, was that demand for the personal training classes going to still be there? Like not knowing how long, you know, the savings that we had built up throughout the years was going to last. So a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress. But I suppose we were quite lucky in that we had each other's a really good, strong partnership. So we were able to kind of like bounce off each other. And we definitely kept ourselves very, very busy throughout the lockdowns as well. Whilst the physical gym itself was closed, we kind of got to work on shifting online. So bringing our personal training online, bringing our classes online, and then creating an online health and wellness program called the Feel Great, which we put a lot of work into. It was months of work went into it, which we would have never had the time to create had it not been for the lockdowns. So it was very stressful period. I suppose there was a few silver linings out of it as well.
So you're back in the gym now. People are back in. Is it, as I said, a little clinical there at the moment? Are people respecting the rules? Are the rules being, you have to fully enforce them? And has that made a difference to the inside of the gym?
Yeah, well, we're very lucky. We have over 4,500 square foot, so we have plenty of space. And you know, we our model is a little bit different from kind of open commercial gym. We're an exclusively private setting, so we do semi-private PT. So there's never you know, that many people in a very large space. And you know, the clients have been fantastic. Yeah, we go through a lot of cleaning gear, a lot of disinfectant, a lot of, you know, blue roll, everything is wiped down and cleaned after a client uses a bit of gear. The trainers are wearing masks, and we have a huge PT studio, so it's quite easy then to adhere to social distancing.
And the ventilation is huge as well. Presumably there's ways of cleaning out the air, which seems to be the most important thing that we could have and should have been doing all along.
Yeah, so we're quite lucky. We have very high ceilings. We have plenty of windows. So ventilation hasn't been an issue for us either. So we're really happy with our setup here, and we're just delighted that we're back open, back in action again.
One of the things that you did during lockdown was connect in new ways, and you started using social a lot more. That's kind of probably the best thing you're going to take away from the whole sorry situation, isn't it? That you can communicate in very effective ways.
Yes. So whilst we were no longer seeing our clients physically and in person, you know, they were seeing us every single day. When the first lockdown was announced, we just made the decision to put a lot of time, a lot of effort into our social media presence, into the online presence. And like, we have posted every single day, if not repeatedly or multiple times a day since COVID began. We've been posting, you know, educational content, podcasts, reels, TikToks, just challenges. So just keeping our clients engaged, but also building the brand, and opening us up to new clients as well.
You're back. You've no intention of going anywhere. We're again, as we were speaking to the lads in the restaurant trade earlier, we'd like to know with a bit of certainty what the world was going to look like in a few weeks' time, in a few months' time. We're back to not knowing, but are you hopeful that this is it now, that you can stay open?
We're choosing to think that way anyway and believe that, because like we're totally closed off to the idea of going backwards. I suppose there was a bit of a hiccup or right during the week. Our classes were due to start up again, our physical classes, sorry, were due to start up again next week, so they all had to be cancelled and deleted. The demand was there, we were taking bookings for them, but obviously they now can't go ahead, and we don't know when they can go ahead. From a business point of view, they'd account for maybe about a third of our revenue pre-COVID, but they're also a fantastic lead generator for us, so clients would they'd come in, they might try one or two classes, and then they'd convert onto the bigger packages into personal training. So we're kind of missing out on that at the moment, but then we're trying our best to make up from it from the online side with the educational program.
Yeah, okay, well look, fingers crossed it holds up for you, which is I think the best we can really look for in the circumstance. What's the website if people are looking for you?
So it's atpfitnesscork.ie, and we'd be very active as well on social media. So you can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, drop us a message, an email, and we'd be happy to help.
Kian O'Flynn, co-owner of ATP Fitness. Best of luck in the future, Kian, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Jonathan.
My thanks as always to all of my guests. Don't forget you can download every episode of Red Business right now from redextra.ie. Maeve Feehan was the producer, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.